Testing, 1, 2. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good, good. I want to talk a little bit about what enlightenment is and what it is not. To become enlightened is not about perfecting our relative state of being. It's not about achieving a state that is in accordance with our expectations and fascinations. It's not about trying to fit things into pigeonholes, but it's about recognizing our true nature. And if you've been practicing for some time now, you've heard this over and over and over again. So these talks are not just for you, but they're reminders for me as well. And despite having heard these talks, me talk about this over and over again, we still hold on to expectations. We still have ideas of, you know, enlightenment. You know, we're looking for a mystical experience. We don't see the extraordinary in the ordinary. Remember the koan, every day is a good day. Last week, where do you go when it's hot? Some of you ladies had the vapors last week, right? Where do you go when it's cold? What did the master say? The heat kills and the cold kills. What did Shoto say in his talk? Ordinary mind is the way. This is a practice where you don't get anything. You know the term I made up, gettization. There's nothing to get. This is why our practice is about realization, realizing who we are beyond this skin bag. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche says, we must surrender our hopes and expectations as well as our fears and march directly into disappointment. We don't like that. We don't want to be disappointed, do we? He goes on to say that disappointment is the first chariot to use on the path of the Dharma. It's the first chariot. Why? Well, because it does not confirm the existence of our ego and its dreams, which is at the heart of our striving and suffering. If we address this problem, we can alter the whole basis of our life. But that's hard work. And we're always trying to figure out shortcuts. 2,600 years, nobody's found one. That don't stop us from looking. You see, what we need to do is step out of the bureaucracy of ego. So what's this mean? Step out of the bureaucracy of the ego. Sounds fancy. It means stepping out of ego's constant desire and pressure to be something that we are not. You see, mankind, womankind are the only animals on the planet trying to be something other than who we are. You don't see cats trying to be dogs. Although I have one cat, I question. I take that back. For the most part. Okay, for the most part. But I do have one at home that follows me around like a little puppy. So rather than forcing ourselves to be different, we need to accept our disenchantment with ourselves and begin to create an atmosphere that cares for and allows us to be as we are. That's the key. What have teachers said down through the ages? Sit with non-seeking mind. There's nothing to get. We already got it. That's why it's called realization. Not gettization, right? We already got it. You know, when Asian teachers first came here, and I've been on the planet for some time now, so I'm living history, I can tell you, when Asian teachers first came here, they were blown away by our feelings of inadequacy, inferiority. They didn't know how to work with it. We're supposedly the richest country, the most sophisticated country in the world, yet we have the highest incidence of depression, of anger, of anxiety. We don't like ourselves. That's what makes capitalism work. Shop till you drop. All I need is, to get a fix. And a fix is not always drugs, you know. It's the new car, the bigger house, the new wife, the new hubby, the cougars, a young guy. You see, so what we need to do is establish a depth of acceptance that does not judge and criticize our wounds. See, it's not rocket science. With greater self-acceptance and love comes a diminishment of the intensity of striving and a greater capacity to be present and authentic to where we are. Present and authentic where we are. And if you've been practicing diligently during this short session, you see how difficult it is to be present. It's very hard to be present. And it's like peeling an onion. The more intense the sitting over a period of time, the more shit that comes up. Then we become preoccupied with that as we sit. Yet the only place we can be, right, is present. But we're not present of the present. Rob Pierce writes that there is nobility in our humanity, and when we truly accept and surrender, truly accept and surrender, we open naturally to our clear, brilliant nature. It's beautiful. Why? Why is that happening? I'll answer for you. Because it's always there in the present in each moment. And as we do so, live in this present moment, from moment to moment, we must learn to live with a central paradox, which is that while we may endeavor to change and grow, change actually comes when we accept fully what is. So to accept fully what is, it starts with commitment. Daito Roshi was fond of saying, freedom is found in commitment. Why is freedom found in commitment? He would say, because once you commit, you don't have to think about it anymore. See? You commit, you're free. And without commitment, we will have no genuine transformation. You see, because when we commit to the practice, we make a choice to face ourselves and fully become engaged in life. How many times have I said, you cannot just go to the light, you have to go to the dark. Light and dark, that's fully engaging. Everything is a dharma. If you pick and choose, then there are aspects of the dharma that you're not engaging. And you're not going to be free. See, commitment requires a willingness to let go of the safety of what is familiar. And usually what is familiar is also limiting. You see, commitment may invoke a fear of a restriction of apparent freedom. And what does Chaim Trumpeter say? Freedom is a myth. The freedom that we embrace is a myth. So if we commit, it may invoke a fear of a restriction of apparent freedom, seemingly like a loss of options. However, commitment usually brings a loss of the freedom to not be fully responsible. You see that? So commitment is defined as a dedication to our true nature. I've been reading Hakuin's biography, and of course he talks a lot about commitment and surrender. And the author who translated and did some commentary had this to say. He's the teacher at the Zen Center in Montreal. And this is what he said. That at the Montreal Zen Center, before a member is accepted as a student, he or she must answer three questions. First, do I really want to see into my true nature? Or am I simply practicing Zen wanting to find peace and comfort or whatever? Second, am I prepared to do the work that is necessary and to go on doing it until I have penetrated to the root? And finally, do I have faith in the teacher, and will I be prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt when necessary? And I had cut him some slack. If the student can answer yes to all three, then he or she is accepted as a student. In this way, a commitment is made. And he goes on to say, it is a commitment not to the Zen Center, not to Zen, not to the teacher, but to oneself. So this commitment thing, why does it feel so frightening? probably because deep down inside we know that there is no escape from the reality of our life. You see, we have a penchant for taking refuge in things that provide an illusion of safety, ease, and happiness. I'm reminded of that commercial where some of us are like the bunny rabbit. We just keep going and going and going, even when we see through the illusion. In taking refuge in the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we take a vow to turn our life around and to see what leads to liberation. We turn inward towards our true nature as a touchstone and inner resource. Now, this implies learning to live with an awareness of our quality, of our innate Buddha nature, the true source of peace and liberation from our life struggles. When we take refuge in the three treasures, we recognize that things are not what we would like them to be. They're not reliable. They're not solid. They're not safe. How many times have I said security is to be found where? In insecurity. Another thing that happens is we recognize that the ego does not have control over reality. And it is our anxiety in a troubled world that leads us to constantly try to control our environment. And as I've said in so many different ways, commitment to the path implies relinquishing of control. And that is a kind of surrender, which is something that the ego fears. See? So you see that to commit to the Buddha Dharma is to confront the ego with its own demise. And on some level, we know this. And that's why commitment can be so disturbing. It's a giving up, a letting go of what we hold to be unchallengeable. See? So when we truly commit, we will repeatedly let go. Gimpo Roshi was famous for saying, almost like a jazz musician, a staccato, he would say, let go, get stuck, let go, get stuck, let go, get stuck, let go, get stuck, let go, get stuck. Because that's what happens. Soon as you let go, knock, knock, stuck, then you let go again. Stuck, and you let go again. And as we let go, we discover new levels of commitment that will demand still more opening. This is why Dogen said, we practice till we die. We never arrive. I went down to Florida to give the precepts to my successor students, 8 of them. They took the precepts. They let go because they didn't come back. They thought they had arrived. In fact, the last I heard, they went off and formed their own little sangha, left Fusho Sensei out in the cold. Just like a spy, right? Left out in the cold. See, we don't want to leave anything behind. We just still want to keep holding on to stuff. But the truth of the matter is, when we truly commit, we can't take our old habits and refuge with us. We no longer can close our eyes and hide once they're open. See, this is when you get the disease that Daido Roshi used to talk about. Zen is a disease. Some people get it, some don't. So if you really commit, you got the disease. It's funny, I was thinking about something Jensen said about putting an amp on the phone, you know, where if something happened to you, you know, the emergency people had to come out, the EMTs, what have you, they could just flip on that amp and it would have all your medical information there. It's very clever. So maybe we need an amp for commitment. Put that on your phone so you can, boop, oh, commit. I gotta commit today. That might work, huh? What do you think? You know, Mr. Rogers, our resident scientist, you think that'll work? Okay, I think it'll work. Well, let's look at what 12th century Zen master Hanji had to say in his facile entitled, "The Ground That Sages Cannot Transmit." Cast off completely your head and skin, thoroughly withdraw from distinctions of light and shadow. Where the 10,000 changes do not reach is the foundation that even 1,000 sages cannot transmit. Simply by yourself, illuminate and deeply experience it with intimate accord. The original light flashes through confusion. It's beautiful. In case 86 of the Blue Cliff Record, Uman tells the assembly that everyone has his own light, which means that truth is not remote, but is under our nose. And I would go so far as to say, it's the nose. So, in closing, let me just say this, and at the risk of being a bit redundant, a true commitment to seeing our true nature can only be made if we can generate the great faith, the great doubt, and the great perseverance necessary to sustain practice. Are you ready to wake up? Thank you.